Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Hey, good morning to you. 909 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in on this Wednesday. McCray Hepler was going to come today, and he had unfortunately had some things come up he could not avoid. So we will play a little bit of McCray Hepler's video out this morning, and we'll get a little more information on that as the show progresses. Also later on in the show, Jimmy Kesson will join me live to talk about the redrawing of boundaries. I know at first you're like, oh, that's kind of boring. Well, let me just real quickly summarize what happened here. So a people's vote said the boundaries must be redrawn. So the Utah state legislator redrew the boundaries, picked a map, said, okay, this is what it's going to be. Well, a bunch of people got together, a couple of clubs or coalitions or whatever, and sued the government and said that map's not good enough. And so it went all the way up to district court in Utah. And this judge, lady by the name of, Diana Gibson, ruled that the legislature's map that it chose was too partisan to Republicans. Now, think about this. Okay, we're in Utah. 90% of Utahns are conservatives. This Diana Gibson is her name. Anyway, she says, oh, you can't pick that map. There's too many Republicans in every district that you've chosen. So we're going to pick another map. So this group that sued the legislature, proposed their own map. And, of course, it's very favorable to them. They basically try to get all the Democrats in Salt Lake City. And Salt Lake City has a large liberal base. And have that be its own district. That way they're like, okay, we can see district, you know, 1 and 3 and 4. We're going to take 2 and make it mostly just Salt Lake City. And that way we could get a Democrat into Congress from Utah. So instead of 4 Republicans representing the state, it would be maybe 3 Republicans and a Democrat. So they file this lawsuit. They submit their own map, which, of course, is very partisan toward Democrats. And the judge looks at the map that the Republicans chose and said, that's too partisan. We're going to use their map. Not kidding. She took the map submitted by the group that wants to promote the Democratic liberal agenda, and she chose that one. She said, oh, let's go. This one's pretty good. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, lawsuits and this kind of stuff shouldn't be about compromise a little bit? Shouldn't it be, I don't know. To me, the group that sued, that was like, we need more Democrats representing Utah, blah, 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 is like, they're trying to cheat the system. And they found a sympathetic judge that also wants to cheat the system. Never mind that a judge shouldn't be making rules on laws that are created by the legislature. Never mind that she's clearly a liberal Democrat herself. But she's just like, no, I like this one's better. We're going to pick this one. So anyway, Jimmy's going to come on and we'll talk a little bit about that and just how it's funny. I asked Jimmy earlier today. I said, this seems hypocritical and double standard and just I don't get it. And he said, well, what it seems like is politics. They're playing politics. And yeah, I suppose he's right, but it's still kind of ridiculous if you ask me. I don't know if you got on social media this morning. If you haven't, you ought to go. There should be pictures upon pictures. I know on my feed, my Facebook feed, because last night, for whatever reason, the Aurora Borealis reached all the way down here to southern Utah. Yeah, if you went out and looked at the northern sky last night, you maybe saw green or bright red or orange or At one picture I saw, it looked like the sunset, only it wasn't the sunset. It was the aurora borealis. Anyway, the northern lights, as they're called, are usually visible in Alaska and Scandinavia, but very rarely will you see them in Utah, and very, very, very rarely will you see them all the way down in southern Utah, like in St. George and Moab. So basically, the scientists say northern lights are, let's see, high levels of activity on the sun that disturb the Earth's magnetic field. I am not an expert in this area, but I can tell you it was pretty cool. And apparently, it's even cooler through the eyes of a camera than it is to the naked eye. So, anyway. By the way, on that redistricting thing, yeah, I got a text here, and the answer is yes. Isn't redistricting the same thing Texas is doing in favor of conservatives? Politics is a synonym for hypocrisy. Well, that is completely true. You know, I grew up in Texas. It was a Democratic state, but it was the old Democrats. It was the Democrats of our fathers or grandfathers that, I mean, some of the core beliefs were the same, and I didn't agree with them, but Democrats claim to have a heart. They claim to be, well, we're about the people, and something has changed, man. Democratic Party has become the party of the extremes. All right, top 10 list is out for causes of death for our current time. Now, the list is for 2024. We don't have numbers for 25 yet, but we will in a couple of months. But number one cause of death in Utah and worldwide is heart disease. Number two cause of death in Utah and worldwide is cancer. And then it kind of, the list changed a little bit here and there as to what, you know, accidents are in there. Diabetes is making the, Alzheimer's is in the top 10. The big story today, though, chronic kidney disease is now among the top 10 leading causes of death globally. In Utah, it is at number 11, but globally, kidney disease has made it all the way to number 9, and that's not good. I remember it was maybe, I want to say 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago, I went to see the doctor, and as usual, you know, just a checkup thing. The doctor does all his stuff, does all his tests, and then he sends you over to the lab to give blood, right? And I didn't think much of it, and, you know, I'd been going through some things, but I was like, oh, we'll go get this checked. And all the numbers came back good on the blood test, except one. And it was, I don't know the terms behind it. I really don't know. But it said on the report, signs of early stage chronic kidney disease. And I was like, well, that actually sounds kind of bad, right? I mean, I've got some kind of disease. I didn't even know I had a disease. So I went back to the doctor for a follow-up, and I said, hey, it says right here I got chronic kidney disease. He said, oh, yeah, I wrote that. I said, oh, okay, so you wrote this. So you know about this. What do I need to do? And he said, nothing. I said, what do you mean nothing? He says, yeah, it's fine. He says, most guys have early stage chronic kidney disease. And I was like, yeah, but if it's a disease and it could eventually kill me, isn't that something I should be concerned about and maybe do something for? And he said, no, no, it'll be fine. So I guess I have some sort of early stage chronic kidney disease. And apparently most guys do. It's more prevalent among males. But now I'm reading the story on The Wire today about how chronic kidney disease has entered the top 10 for causes of death in the world. I'm like, I wonder if I should go back to my doc and say, dude, it's top 10 now. Is this something we should do something about? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is. But it's certainly worth talking about. I'm not going to be here the next few days. I'm going on a little bit of a trip. I'm not retiring yet. It's getting close, but not yet. But I did want to mention that airplane flight. It has never really bothered me. I think somewhere in the back of my mind, I think, okay, well, you know, people do die. Airplanes crash, and, you know, we humans can die from a 10-foot fall. Actually, the number one cause of trips to the emergency room are what they call GLFs, ground level falls, right? So, you know, if we die from ground level or from 10 feet, it's possible, you know, that you could die at that low a level. If you fall out of the sky at, you know, 100 feet, 500 feet, 1,000 feet, 20,000 feet, your chances aren't good. But that's that's in the back of my mind. But to be quite honest, when I get on an airplane, I don't really think much about it. The only time, and I think a lot of people are like this, the only time maybe it enters my head is takeoff and landing, because you got the, you know, kind of the intersection there of you flying and you not flying. Have I ever been in any real scary situations on a plane? No. One time I remember I forget where we were flying, but we were, you know, at 40,000 feet or whatever, and we got some serious turbulence. And I think all of us have experienced that. Was it scary? Not really. Was it uncomfortable and kind of, I mean, I didn't hit my head on the ceiling or anything like that, but, it was something to be concerned about. But I've talked about it before on my show. I have a daughter who is terrified when she gets on an airplane. She just doesn't like it at all. It you know, the white knuckles and digging your fingernails into your own hand and stuff. And, or if you have a hold of someone else's arm like mine, she'll dig her fingernails into my arm, because she's scared. And I understand that. But this daughter of mine, who is now 23 years old, has flown. She's done it quite a few times actually now in her life. And the way I remember the very first time she was going to get on an airplane, and she confided me. She said, "Dad, I'm scared to death. I mean, and I said, one thing about her, and I think this will work on a lot of people, works on me, is to use logic. When you think about flying on an airplane, the odds of you, dying from some kind of aviation accident are so slim. They're actually, I think it's 100 times more likely to die in a car accident on the way to the airport or the way home than you are to actually die in an airplane. And, you know, everybody's like, yeah, I've heard that before. Is it really? Yeah, that's actually a real statistic. One of the reasons I bring it up, number one, I'm flying on an airplane tomorrow. Number two, today is the anniversary of the American Airlines crash that happened in right at JFK Airport, plane that was headed to the Dominican Republic. Something broke on the plane. Something happened early on. It crashed into a Queens neighborhood. It killed all 260 people on board, and it actually killed 5 people because it landed in a neighborhood. It took out a couple of houses, killed 5 people on the ground as well. But investigating that crash, I don't know if this makes me feel better or worse, but that crash, it was deemed was human error. The pilot screwed up. I maybe somebody out there knows more about that than I do, but I'm not sure what the human error was, but it turned out it wasn't the airplane at all. It was a person operating the airplane that caused the crash. So I bet his name wasn't Sullenberger or whatever that guy's name. That guy was pretty good, but that was 24 years ago today. That was on this date in 2001. And as I was looking up some of the statistics on plane crashes, they made me feel better. I'm a logical guy. I like numbers. I like logic. Did you know, let's see, for instance, the chances of you dying in a plane crash are 1 in 13 million. That number keeps going down because we keep not having plane crashes. And we haven't had any major plane crashes since, what was that, the Air Max or whatever, the Boeing, whatever plane crashed a few years ago. But, we have been getting better and better and better at flying airplanes. One of the things I was reading about, this is interesting, it says every aviation accident, no matter how minor, leads to new regulations and procedures that further improve safety. As the saying goes, every safety regulation is written in blood because it's based on a past incident. Does that make me feel better? Yeah, it actually kind of does, because if they see, now I don't know what you do when it was operator error, right? When the pilot screwed up, but, perhaps there's a regulate, you know, maybe the pilot's not allowed to, you know, drink alcohol within 12 hours of his flying, or so I don't know. Funny story, by the way, it may have been 2 or 3 years ago, we went to on a cruise to Alaska. And of course, we flew from St. George to Salt Lake, and then from Salt Lake to Seattle, where we caught the cruise ship. And the flight to St. George to Salt Lake was not a big deal, although I can't believe how far they made you walk. That was when everything was under construction. But anyway, we got there, and then we got to our connecting flight on time. We got on the plane, and we're all sitting there on the airplane waiting and waiting and waiting. And finally, they made an announcement after we'd been on the plane for like 45 minutes, said, yeah, we might have some mechanical issues with this plane. If we can't fix those, you might have to get a new plane. And you might all have to, what do they call it, deplane or deboard or disembark or whatever it is. Excuse me. Anyway, we sat there a while longer. I don't know. I honestly lost track of time. I know we were on that plane for an hour or more. And finally, the announcement comes over the loudspeaker. We apologize. Our flight has been canceled, and you all of you will have to leave the airplane now. And we're like, oh, no. You know, because originally they had told us we're just going to get another plane if there are problems. So as we're getting off the plane, we're like, oh, man, I wonder what was wrong. Well, it's okay. I guess it's okay that they're canceling our flight, because better to have your flight canceled than to have the plane explode at 40,000 feet or whatever. You know, I mean, you kind of justify it that way. Well, as we're getting off the plane, a few people had stopped and talked with the with some of the personnel there, and it turns out that the co-pilot, the guy that was, so you got the head pilot and the main guy, right, the captain, and then you got the co-pilot. The co-pilot had been, this is unbelievable, pulled over, and mind you, this is like, I don't know, 11 o'clock in the morning or something, maybe noon. The co-pilot had been pulled over and arrested for driving under the influence. DUI on the way to the airport to co-pilot the airplane that I was sitting on getting ready to take off on. Yeah, I was like, you know what, airplane, they lied to us, of course, about the airplane having, there was nothing wrong with the airplane. There was, the fact of the matter is they didn't have the flight crew. And because one of the guys decided at noon, no less, to get plastered and get arrested on the way. Now, he probably lost his job. I hope he did. And he's probably had to reevaluate his life's priorities. Maybe he got himself into some kind of treatment program. I don't know any of that stuff. All I know is, you know, it was one of those deals like, okay, you can justify. I'm glad they didn't fly the plane because it had mechanical problems. Well, it didn't. But actually, I'm kind of glad that they didn't get us up in the air because the co-pilot was drunk. He was blasted. He was stoned. I mean, jeez. Anyway, we had scheduled the cruise we were going on a day and a half in advance from our flight, a day and a half cushion. So we were able to actually still make our cruise. But, I learned a lesson on that one. Always schedule some cushion in there, right, if you're planning on it. Because I know you don't want to have to pay for a hotel if you go a day early and stuff. But isn't it nice to actually make – imagine how much you would spend if you were, say, supposed to be on a cruise ship or some kind of tour or whatever, and your flight was delayed and you missed it, and then you had to – you know, if you're taking a cruise to Acapulco, you have to fly then to Acapulco to catch up with the cruise ship or just give up the cruise entirely. Yeah, you don't want to do that. It seems like I had one more story I wanted to get to before we go to break here. No, it was just about the congressional. You can view a map of what right now is the congressional district map that they will be using. Now, there's going to be appeals, and like I said, one of the state congressmen said, well, let's impeach the judge. I don't know if that's really going to happen, but you can view the map on 890kdxu.com. I have a story up right now. It's titled, a new congressional map may open door for Utah Democrats. It has District 1, basically extreme northern Utah, District 2. Looks like it includes maybe that's the Salt Lake one, right? Which that would not include us anymore. District 3 would include us, and then District 4. We'll take a look at that, and we'll talk a little bit more about what it means for you and I. And by the way, I did contact Celeste Malloy yesterday after this ruling came out and said, does this affect you? And she said, yes, this does affect me, but I don't know how much yet. And to be honest, the whole thing is still pending because there's going to be appeals and stuff. And so, and it was cool. Celeste to text me back because I know they're in the middle of trying to gather all the House of Representatives people back to vote on the CR that the Senate finally came to their senses and passed. And by the way, the Democrats gained nothing from this. It was just kind of some kind of weird power play thing, whatever, hate Donald Trump type thing. But anyway, they had to get all these House of Representatives members to get back to Washington, D.C. so they could do the vote. They expect the vote to happen sometime today. And then the president, I think Donald Trump will sign that as soon as he gets a chance to do it. So by the end of today, I think the government will technically be reopened, which, again, if I'm getting on an airplane tomorrow, that would be really kind of nice. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. And Jimmy Kesson hanging out, ready to come on the air. We're going to talk about, well, politics and gerrymandering. It's kind of a funny word, gerrymandering. We'll talk about what that means and more when we come back here on The Andy Griffin Show.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with The Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. Great reaction from you out there for the free food at Angelica's. I haven't counted them all, but well, my thing says I have 18 texts or something in just a few seconds and more coming. And but we do have winners. Let's see. Dennis is one of them. James and Debbie. Yeah, Dennis, James, and Debbie are our winners. So enjoy Angelica's insider hack for you. Their pina, they call it fresca, is really good drink. They have, of course, a sweet pork is second to none. And try that little pickled habanero onion. I don't like pickles. I don't like onions, raw onions, but they soak this thing. They pickle it, I guess, and just a little thin one put on your street taco, and boom, you got that zing that you always want. It's pretty good stuff. All at Angelica's. Well, guess what? Jimmy Kesson is here. What's up, Jimmy?
Good morning, Andy. You know, people are going to get the impression that you enjoy eating at Angelica's.
I enjoy eating. You could stop the sentence right there. I enjoy eating. And then you could add Angelica's. Yes, that too. I enjoy eating everywhere. But Angelica's is good stuff. And, you know, the owner of Angelica's he was my very first AG-approved client 6 years ago when we first started the program, the AG-approved program.
Very cool.
And clients have come and clients have gone with varying in their mind success. But Angelica's has stuck with me all along because he always says, anytime I see someone with gray hair walk into Angelica's, I know they were listening to Andy.
Hey, good food, consistent service, you know, that's why they've become a fixture in this community.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was talking with him about his success and because he's owned previous restaurants. And he's like, I don't know what it is. He said, I know the food is really good. But, you know, I had other restaurants. The food there was really good, too. But they didn't do well. But Angelica's has done well. And I just love it. I think it's a great, great atmosphere. So, Jimmy, have you been able to glean any knowledge, insider information about this whole boundary redrawing? And by the way, it's not happening just in Utah. It's happening all over the country, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, this is a battle that is it's a normal part of American politics. Redistricting is something that every state goes through at least once a decade, most states more than once, as it rebalances its congressional district. Constitutionally, this is necessary. You know, people move, populations change within a state. From time to time, you have to balance the congressional districts so that you don't have disparate populations in one district versus another.
Well, let's address that then. Is this needed in Utah to balance it out, or is this just politics and people wanting to? I mean, the map this lady picked, this judge picked, very much favors the one district being having a chance at least of getting a Democratic representative. It sounds really political to me. It doesn't really sound like balance.
Well, it is political, and to say that we're going to balance this based on the number of Republicans or Democrats that live in a state is not really how this is done. Utah has super majorities in both houses of the legislature.
Yeah.
Republicans win by massive victories across the state. You know, conversely, California has super majorities of Democrats in both houses. And while Republicans get a significant minority in that state voting, that doesn't mean that they get equal say in drawing congressional districts. Now, California's taken it to a new extreme, and there gets a point where gerrymandering becomes an obvious over political drawing districts that have no basis on population but are clearly drawn in order to get a specific result in an election, and that's not what they're designed to do. But the truth is that balancing the population in Utah really does require breaking up Salt Lake County into the other district, because otherwise you've got a congressional map, and the one that this Judge Gibson is trying to force on Utah, you know, you've got one congressional district that takes up 3/4 of the land on the state.
Yeah.
And then another one that's just Salt Lake City, so that the Democrats can have a seat. That's not how this works.
It shouldn't be.
It's not. And of course, it starts with constitutionally, the legislature is in charge of this, and it was designed that way. If you have supermajorities in either party in your legislature, your districts are going to reflect those supermajorities, and they should. We are a constitutional republic. We are not a direct democracy, right? And that means that representation is based, right, on the majority in each district representing who they want to represent them, and then the legislature making the decisions for the state. And when it comes to redistricting, constitutionally, they're the ones that have that responsibility.
Now, I know the X's and O's of why the judge is making a ruling. Somebody sued. There's a couple of groups up there, and I'm not going to say their names. I don't want to promote them. I think that they're ridiculous.
There are a couple of left-leaning groups that have very generic-sounding, almost conservative-sounding names, but they not, aren't. Yeah.
They drew up a lawsuit, and they proposed their own map.
Right.
Very obviously, like you were saying, very, very much in their favor, like fixing the game, like playing a game of Monopoly, only you make the rules to favor yourself. So anyway, they do this lawsuit. It goes all the way to district court in Salt Lake, and that's where this canon, is that her name?
Gibson.
Yeah, Gibson lady makes this ruling. But I'm looking at it, and I'm going, now, wait a second. Legislative, judicial, presidential. How does this judicial branch lady crawl over into the legislative area and make a ruling? It doesn't seem like she should have any rights, should she?
Well, there's nothing in the law that says she should.
Yeah.
And when you add to it that I just read that she actually made her ruling at 5 minutes to midnight.
Yeah.
Midnight was the deadline for the making a ruling on legislative districts, and they're trying to jam this through with no room or time to fix it. The whole thing is very political and clearly designed to override the will of the people and their elected representatives by a judge who wants her personal opinion to be more important than Utah's state constitution, and that is judicial tyranny.
And yet it's happening in Utah, but it's happening around the country, too. I mean, we saw some judges try to throw our president in jail before he was president. Same kind of deal where judges are going, well, I'm going to rule this way because of my politics.
Right. And we have a problem in America, and it is particularly seen in Utah. We probably exhibit this problem to a greater extent than almost any other state in the union.
Okay.
By nature, conservatives are generally nice people.
Mm-hmm.
And in Utah, mm-hmm. if we are anything in Utah, if you ask, what's Utah? Oh, Utah's nice.
We're nice, yeah.
We're nice in Utah. Mm-hmm. All right. The left is not nice.
No.
They don't play nice. They don't even play fair. The right plays generally nice and tries to play fair.
Yeah.
That is not a recipe for success. And so what we have happening is the left, who doesn't play nice and doesn't care how they get their way, just that they get their way.
Yeah.
Then it intends to infringe on it because we're nice, so we're really not going to push back. We're not going to hold these judges accountable. I mean, we're already seeing articles all over the state saying impeaching Judge Gibson. Oh, that wouldn't be nice.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't be nice. It sounds like to me a recipe for a bully. The bully is the one that doesn't have principles, doesn't have ethics, and isn't nice, and doesn't play fair. The nice person has standards, ethics, plays fair, and is nice, and so the one without the ethics is going to push the other one around.
And what you end up getting is really very, very simple. The policies of the left in this country are popular with about 10 to 20% at most of the population. All of their issues are 80-20 issues, and they're on the 20 side. And some of them are 90-10, and they're on the 10 side.
Yeah.
Yet, they have representation in putting their policies in place in nearly half the country.
Now,
their policies
that math doesn't fit, Jimmy. 10 to 20%, but they're getting half of their way.
Because they are, because when it comes to bullying, being loud, and winning by any means necessary, fair, legal, or not, that's the left's playground.
That's a pretty good summary of what we've run into. You're right. We do have a problem. Is there a fix?
Well, I mean, the right's got to grow a backbone. They have to, you know, Judge Gibson must be held accountable for ignoring the Constitution and ruling based on her opinion rather than what the law says. And until the right begins to hold the left accountable for the things they do that are outside the boundaries of fair play and legal boundaries, then no, we're not going to see this fixed. We're going to have to stand up, grow a backbone, and say, you can try to advance your policies, but you don't get to throw out the law to do it, and you don't, and you have, there has to be some semblance of fair play.
There are people, though, Jimmy, on the right, these nice people who, while they say they have a backbone, will say it's more important to be nice than it is to be to fight back, and they will stick with that. A big group of people will say, let's be nice here, and they won't stick up for themselves because they're too busy being nice. Well, I'm not criticizing that. I'm just saying there's a chunk of people that really feel that way.
And what you end up happening is Utah pushing for a Democrat seat in the House of Representatives because that's nice and fair, because there are some Democrats in Utah. They should have representation. But will you see that in Illinois or Massachusetts or almost any blue state? Of course not.
No.
And so
California and New York.
Yeah. So we're going to be fair and give Democrats seats that they have not earned,
right?
Because there's really they're a minority, we have a supermajority, a veto-proof majority in both houses in Utah.
Yeah.
That alone should tell you that our congressional districts should basically match that.
Yeah. I agree.
There's a supermajority in California of Democrats. The Democrats should have a massive majority in their House of Representative allocation, and they do. In California, it goes way beyond the balance of votes, but you know what? It goes way beyond the balance of votes in Utah, too. Just because you're a significant minority doesn't mean you get the privileges of the majority.
Yeah. It reminds me of what's going on in Oregon, where most of Oregon is actually conservative, but there's that big, giant population center, Portland area, of liberal people. And so they rule because there's the most people. They're the most people there, and that's where the government is. And I know a lot of the rural part of Oregonians are like, can we just secede and go to Idaho? Can we make greater Idaho and just be, because we believe their politics way more than we believe Oregon politics.
And look, I sympathize with their position. It's difficult, but population-wise, the left is going to have the majority, if not a supermajority, of seats because, as you said, they've got the population in Portland that is greater than the rest of the state. And when they split up districts in Oregon, they split that population. That's why you don't have Republican congressmen coming from Oregon, even though you've got a very red part of that state.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's it can be certainly frustrating, but a good explanation by Jimmy here of politics. Let me get a commercial break in. We'll wrap up the show here. Talk about, will the government actually reopen soon? I think it will. I hope it will. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Well, shoot, let's give away some more, Angelica, shall we? I'm going to get two more winners. Just text Angel to me at 435-467-5842. We'll give away two more $20 worth of, they're actually two tens, so they're $10 gift cards. We're going to give away two each, though, to the winners. If they want to text me, 435-467-5842. It's funny, my wife texted me on this last one with a picture of a little angel emoji, and I said, honey, you are an angel, but you can't win. So,
but something tells me you're taking her out to lunch.
Not today, but I will be taking her out to lunch in for the next 11 or 12 days. So, Jimmy Keston on the show with me. Jimmy, you doing all right, man? Everything's good?
Yeah, blessed.
Yeah.
Having fun.
Jimmy, for those that don't know, is the pastor at the Foursquare Gospel Church, Solomon's Porch.
Solomon's Porch.
Did
That's
I get all that in right?
Yeah, it works.
Yeah. So maybe explain that to me then. Solomon's Porch is the Solomon's local branch?
Porch, Solomon's Porch is what we call our church. Our actual name is the St. George Central Foursquare Church. Wow. That's our legal name.
Okay.
Doing business as the St. George Central Foursquare Church. We're part of the International Church of the Foursquare Gospel. What's the short version? We're a non-denominational Bible Christian church.
You said short version. That's not short.
Yeah. Non-denominational Christian church affiliated with the International Foursquare Movement.
Okay. One of the things you guys do, tell us about your Sunday feast. Tell us what you guys are doing, because a lot of us are very religious people, and, you know, and we'll tithe and we'll do those things, but actually doing some kind of service for people, but we do it, but maybe not as much as we could. Tell us what it is you do. And I don't say this because I don't want to say, well, look at Jimmy, he's great. That's not my point. My point is that you're actually doing something about something, and I like that.
Well, one of our favorite sayings at Solomon's Porch, it's not about me. Mm-hmm. So what we do, and we've been doing for 20 years now, as we just celebrated our 20th anniversary here in St. George, is we believe that we've been called to be the hands and feet of Jesus to the community to meet the needs of people. And we believe that when people are in need, that they should look to the church, and I mean the greater church, the body of Christ, mm-hmm. for that assistance. So our Friday food pantry does about 75 emergency supplemental food boxes to needy families every Friday. Our Sunday feast serves a full course restaurant quality meal. It ain't no soup kitchen. Full course restaurant quality meal to anywhere between 75 to 100 of our homeless, elderly, low income, and lonely. We serve food for about 20,000 meals a year without a single penny of government money and no paid staff.
And if you don't mind, can you you get donations from like restaurants and stuff? What are some of the big ones that really make it possible?
We have a tremendous partnership with the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You may have heard of them.
Yeah.
An annual grant that we use at the Bishop's Storehouse. And then there are several restaurants like Olive Garden, Red Lobster, Longhorn Steakhouse.
Wow.
That a couple of the Mavericks,
boys, yeah.
Right? A couple of the Mavericks in town that all donate food. Plus, all of the local grocery stores donate food through the Utah Food Bank, who supplies us. We get the food rotated off the shelves of our grocery stores on Friday, which is where the food for our pantry and much of the food for Sunday comes from.
And most of the, well, not all of the, it's not expired food, right? It's just food that will expire in you know, before long.
Most of our food is good for 3 days to a week, depending on which store. The one thing you learn when you run a food pantry is there are stores that rotate food off of their shelves earlier than others. Mm. And there's food that you get that is closer to done from some stores.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it's going to be food that was rotated off the shelves, but not out of date. Even the perishables is all going to be stuff that'll be good for, you know, 3 days to a week, and provide supplemental food assistance.
I know this is a dumb question, but I got to ask it. What's in it for you? We go through life and we have to everything we do, we have some kind of assessment of, you know, what am I going to get out of this? What do you get out of this?
You know, we serve the community because we serve the Lord. And what I get out of it is the gratitude of knowing that I am giving back to the Lord for what he's done for me. I could never begin to repay our Lord Jesus Christ for what he's done for me, my family, and my life. This is just our way of giving back to the community out of gratitude for what God's done for us.
Hopefully nobody was offended. I didn't mean to diminish if you are, say, a member of my church, paying tithes and fast farming, those things are important. I did not in any way mean to diminish those. I just think it's really cool, Jimmy, that you're out there, boots on the ground, as they say.
And look, we're full tithers, my wife and I. We believe in God being the Lord of our finances. We also believe that that we make a greater impact in building the kingdom of God when people can see that we care. People don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. Mm. And so Solomon's Porch loves unconditionally. That is our foundational rule. We love people unconditionally, and when we see people in need, we try to assist where we can through these feeding ministries and connecting people with resources, not because there's something in it for us, but when the community thrives, there is something in it for all of us.
Yeah. And that goes hand in hand with a saying I always loved, and that is people won't remember a year, 5 years, 10 years from now what you said, but they will remember how you made them feel.
Same kind of deal. Amen. And it's just, you know, it's about touching lives. And we make no, we are touching lives with the love of our Lord Jesus Christ. We just happen to be his representatives here on earth trying to meet a need. And we don't, and like I say, there's nothing selfish about this. I mean, there's plenty of things I do that are for me and selfishly for me. But of course, this isn't one of them.
By the way, you can catch Jimmy's Bible sermon every Sunday morning at 7 a.m. right here on KDXU.
Arise and Shine with Solomon's Porch.
And in fact, Jimmy's going to record an Arise and Shine right as soon as we finish here today, which is only about 20 seconds away. Jimmy, thanks for coming today and explaining the whole redistricting thing. And I still don't know where the word gerrymandering comes from, but that's for another show.
I don't know. We'll have to call Jerry and ask him.
Well said. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Mello is in tomorrow to take the show. See you later.